Dr. Kesby, what's actually happening in the brain when we experience pleasure?
So without at the risk of oversimplifying things, there's a whole range of processes that are involved when we experience pleasure. So pleasure itself is very based on cultural experiences, our history of, you know, past experiences with pleasurable things. And I suppose the best example of when we don't experience pleasure normally, a decrease in pleasure, would be sort of major depression and those types of disorders. But obviously involved in that experience of pleasure is the anticipation, the motivation to work for that pleasure, which is involved with other processes that, like goal-directed learning and habit formation and other neurotransmitters such as dopamine, which is a chemical messenger. So it's quite an expansive set of processes that work throughout the brain.
Okay, and so the release of dopamine is obviously very important. Are there any implications for excessive amounts of dopamine in the system?
Yeah, so dopamine is a quite an interesting neurotransmitter. It's particularly important for our want to go seek pleasure and our expectations of what sort of pleasure we will receive from an activity. And I suppose that the common disorders and neuropsychiatric disorders we associate with dopamine are Parkinson's disease, where we have too little dopamine because dopamine cells die, and that leads to those motor problems you see with that disorder, and schizophrenia, which I work on here at Queensland Brain Institute, which has too much dopamine, which is what's the cause of the psychotic symptoms we see. And that's very similar to what we see with drugs of abuse. They increase dopamine release, and a lot of them induce psychotic symptoms as well.
Okay, so how does the release of dopamine differ from the release of other neurotransmitters like serotonin?
Well, they kind of all work in concert. No system in the brain is, there's redundancy systems in place. So when something doesn't work, generally other things try to pick up the slack, and they all have their role in various factors. So serotonin is also important for pleasurable experiences and happiness and those sort of things. It's actually a molecule that's very similar to dopamine. So they have very similar processes, but in terms of their location within the brain, we have very specific pathways for dopamine release and very specific pathways for serotonin release. So they are involved in different parts of those processes. So as I said, dopamine is particularly important in that drive to go seek something pleasurable. So while you may get the same pleasure from an ice cream as somebody else, if you have altered dopamine states, you might not be willing to cross the road to purchase that ice cream, whereas that person might.
You're listening to The Daily. I'm talking to Dr. James Kesby from the University of Queensland about all things dopamine and the pursuit of pleasure. James, you just mentioned that dopamine is maybe influential in our decision-making process. Just how exactly can our decision-making processes be influenced by the pursuit of dopamine?
So we all work towards outcomes that we find, I suppose, pleasurable or valuable. That might mean you go to work, not necessarily because you would do that otherwise, but you know that it gives you money and you can do other things on the weekend, and that drive sort of keeps you going towards that process. And our brain has a whole bunch of processes involved that sort of, predicting what the outcome will be and how a changing environment around us alters that pleasure. So, you know, for example, if you have a simple choice of steak or pizza for dinner, you might like steak and pizza pretty equally, so most of the time you'll just choose whichever. Now, if you had five meals of steak in a row and I gave you that choice again, pizza or steak, you're probably more likely to choose the pizza, just because having steak so regularly has decreased its relative, you know, value to you. You want something different. Now, when those systems aren't working correctly, you might not be able to make that choice. You might still choose steak. And that's what we see in some of these neuropsychiatric disorders, and especially, you know, addiction, where people continually choose the drug, even though the outcomes from using that drug tend to be worse for them. So they're unable to sort of update that strategy of seeking pleasure.
Okay, so addiction is stemming from a warping of the decision-making process? Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, to some extent. Obviously, how we get to that point where someone's using a drug that often can be involved in a lot of different factors prior to that. But once we get to that stage where someone's routinely using a drug, it doesn't become so much about the drug makes me feel so good, I'm going to work really hard to get it again. It more becomes a bit more habitual, so an automatic behavior where you're not even making a conscious decision. And those type of behaviors are very hard to change. They're very subconscious. in the sense that even if you take the drug and you don't get any pleasure from it, and it has a negative consequence on your social life or, you know, all those other things associated with it, you'll still keep making that decision because you're not actually choosing. You're just following the autopilot. And there are a lot of other things, stimuli, like anything you associate with that decision tends to remind you of it and increase that drive. And that's why relapse is so common in these disorders.
Okay, well, it's really interesting stuff. Thanks so much for joining us on The Daily this morning.
No problems. Thanks for having me.